Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Oh, when I need a laugh, there's a helping people. With Tom Fox talking to these funny people. He's asking what they find in the town stories. Can somebody yell out the name of the show, please?
It's my mate, Water Toaster.
Oh, it's my mate,
Water Toaster.
Yeah, yeah, it's my mate,
Water Toaster.
Toaster for my love.
Hello and welcome to My Mate Bought a Toaster. My guest this week is the fabulous actor, Seamus Dever. I would have always put you as a diva, but Dever. How often do you get divered?
7 out of 10 times.
Okay. Yeah. So Seamus Dever is here, and I'm really excited to welcome him.
But not this since college, my God.
Okay. Well, there was
Sorry.
We are sitting in my radio show studio. So we're actually in central London town. Really excited that we've got a proper studio. I can see him in the flesh. This is not a remote thing, because you might hear the American actor here and think, this guy's surely in LA. He's right in front of me. And right now he's logging into his phone.
Should I do a British accent so we convince him, like, he's here. He's here the entire time. Wow, he's guaranteed to be in the studio. Why wouldn't he be? He's speaking with an accent. I can do that.
What I like about the American-British accent, I mean, that is obviously a spot-on British accent.
Oh, thank you.
It's very good, but also there's an assumption of suavity and smoothness comes with the British accent.
Well,
but
that's
actually,
the
reality is not that.
That's what we learn in drama school. I'm trying to rough it up a little bit, but we learn posh accents first and foremost, and like working on George Bernard Shaw, you know? And then later we realize not everybody talks like that.
How often do you get a gig with a big old accent requirement?
I play like almost exclusively foreigners these days. It's bizarre. Wow. Yeah. Within the last year, I've played German twice, English once, and Russian. So I'm kind of like, not that I want to be like master of dialects. Here's my philosophy about the whole thing. The diversity push in America is fantastic because people are getting opportunities that they've never gotten before. But what happens to those white actors? Well, you know, we're the villains now. And so if you can do accents from foreign people and be kind of shady, that's probably some nice pivoting you can do as an actor. And so that's kind of what I've done the last few years.
Right, so acting-wise, similar, I would say, this is the thing I got pigeonholed early on in my career. Friendly guy, nice guy. You've got a nice
friendly
face.
Guy,
you've
nice
got a
guy.
Nice face.
Yeah.
But then when you get the opportunity to take the nice face to nasty people...
Well, you can hide behind that. It's sort of, I call it like the Trojan horse. You come in there, they because I played a nice guy on American television for a long time. Sorry, and television worldwide, by the way.
Of course. This is Castle, right?
Castle,
okay,
yeah.
There we go.
And,
well, for American listeners, Castle.
Castle.
Okay.
For American listeners out there, we called it Castle. and so I
for
kind
chess
of,
fans, Rook. Sorry.
And I played a good guy for such a long, long, long time.
Yeah.
And so I use that as sort of this thing where it's like, well, we expect him to be the nice guy. And then when I, you know, murder somebody or I'm devious in some sort of way, they go, we didn't expect that at all.
Good.
So it's a bit of a Trojan horse. It's
kind
of fun.
That. And it's fun to play as well because you're toying with audience expectations. You're not delivering what they expect. And when you also, presumably, when you do the same character for years and years and years, there must be times when you're just like, oh, I'm a bit, you know, you can phone it in after a little while, can't you?
Well, you know, I would love to say that that's something that I agree with as a philosophy, but yes, you can get away with, hold on, let me phrase that. Let me catch that in a way. You can neutralize yourself very easily.
That's such a good euphemism. I like that.
I mean, it's being lazy is what it is,
being
but,
lazy, but
I don't agree with it. But
of course, I don't mean, you wouldn't do it on purpose, but
no,
you can find
it's a
yourself
poison.
Doing it.
It's a poison, and people get it like, whatever, I just barely memorized my lines, man. I was in my trailer just now learning it, and you kind of go, or like, yeah, I'm not even off book, man. Let's just, do you mind running the lines with me a couple times?
I do, actually.
Yeah.
I absolutely do. I know exactly what you mean.
Like,
I know
no,
that time.
No, I know what you're doing. You're using me.
True.
So if you're an actor out there and someone says to you, hey, man, do you mind running through these lines? And you're like, wow, this is amazing. The lead of the show wants to run lines with me. It's because he or she is not off book yet.
Yes. This is good. This is becoming the actor's studio.
And you like also say yes to that, by the way. So this is the past 3 months. Hit me. They're going to be some of the most boring things you've ever seen.
Well, we're looking at the past 3 months here of Seamus Devers' Amazon. Do you mind if I go for a little scroll?
Yes.
Well, because what you can do, right, what you can do with your Amazon account, right, as I look on your, I'm looking on your phone, and this is quite fun, actually, to look on someone else's phone.
My phone is an open book.
Yeah, okay. So what I can do is filter by date.
Ooh.
Seamus.
Ooh.
And what I'm now going to do...
Oh, you're going to go to the oldest stuff.
I'm going back to that. What was the first year, you think, by the way?
God, the first year I started ordering on the Megalith. And by the way, I'm very cautious about the way I refer about Amazon because I work for them occasionally, so I'm going to be very kind. For the Megalith Amazon, maybe 2007.
Two.
Oh, my God.
Actually, 2001, but you didn't buy anything. So that sometimes happens. We've seen this before on the show. So 2002, we're going back to the Seamus Devers of 2002. And the first thing you bought was The Four Agreements.
Oh, a book. My wife bought that, I'm sure. Yes.
Okay, okay.
Self-help book. Do you know it?
No, tell me more about The Four Agreements,
please. It's sitting on my shelf. I'll get back to you in a couple of months when it's like this.
So when you said, do you know about it? That wasn't rhetorical.
Do you know about it? Because I don't. Actually, I can't even hazard a guess what it might be, so I won't.
But we're going back to 2002. Give us a bit of Seamus' background. What's happening to you in 2002?
In 2002, I'm living in an apartment in Hollywood that I would live in until the year 2010, which had a great view of the Hollywood sign and a lot of junkies in my brick building that you probably shouldn't live in a brick building if you live in Los Angeles.
Why?
A seismic earthquake. My God, it's a death trap. So, and it's right near the Hollywood Fault, too. Didn't know that either in 2002.
Is it full of Brits who have no idea? Just going, well, this is jolly and bricky.
This is
Victorian.
Great. Yes,
this
reminds me of home. I shall die in here. It shall be my sarcophagus. I'm living in there. It's 2002. I'm an actor. I'm probably struggling still. I was probably doing I was doing a play. Yes. No, that was a year before I did a play called The Clockwork Orange. Uh-huh. And so I was still probably doing theater, and I was doing the Texas Shakespeare Festival at that moment, 2002, where I played Hotspur and Posthumus Leonatus in Cymbeline. That was probably, I'm only giving that as a highlight because that was probably the highlight of my year. It was sort of still auditioning for television and trying to get my foot in the door with TV and doing guest stars on shows like Crossing Jordan and things like that. So that's Seamus at that point. And working at Samuel French Bookstore in Los Angeles.
Okay, so this is Seamus. You still got the side hustle make ends meet.
Yep.
Look, working in a bookstore, that's great.
It was great, yeah.
Great that you're working in a bookstore and buying loads of books on Amazon at the same time.
Well, yeah, we didn't carry that book, apparently.
Okay, so let's move on through right now, Seamus. Okay. We're going to go to 2003.
Okay.
And there's a load of stuff here. This is really, really interesting. So you have bought Awakening of a Jehovah's Witness.
Oh.
Jehovah's Witnesses, Their Claims. This is from 2003. Tell me more.
Again, we're on my wife's stuff. She's dominating this whole conversation. When is it going to get to us, Tom?
I don't know.
She grew up as a Jehovah's Witness. She was a Jehovah's Witness, and she left the cult, I'm going to call it a cult, about a year before I met her. And so we've gone through a big transition process of me, you know, telling her that just because I'm an atheist doesn't mean I'm going to hell. That doesn't really exist in the afterlife and all these other things. So there's been some cult deprogramming that's been going on, casual cult deprogramming. Mm-hmm. We don't wear uniforms or anything like that. And so that was sort of her getting her awareness that there are other people who have left too.
Yes. That must be a tremendous comfort for people who've left those things. That you get it a lot with Scientology as well, which you must see plenty of in Hollywood. That's obviously huge in Hollywood, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
But finding other people who have also left, the comfort in that. Much like hanging out with other people who vape. You know, you could all compare notes on smoking. So I'm so glad we're out of the smoking ring now.
Through that process, she met, do you know the playwright Phyllis Nage?
I don't know.
She was big here, I think, for a brief time during that 90s period of theater out here. Anyway, so she's a former Jehovah's Witness as well. So like through this, like meeting all these people, and this is prior to like Facebook groups and anything, so I don't even know how she met these people, but all these people talking about leaving Jehovah's Witnesses and that that process.
And did she grow up a Jehovah's Witness?
She did.
Her whole life.
She was essentially born into it. Her parents have also now left too. So it's been sort of a good process with all them realizing that it was all a lie.
Okay. You know. You also bought A Mighty Wind. Here we are. This is December 2003.
Good movie.
Christmas present.
Yes. I think it was to my parents maybe.
Yeah, there you go. This is, actually it was delivered to Julie, it says here.
That's my wife, yeah.
Okay. A Mighty Wind. The fabulous film from the director, of course, of Best in Show and Waiting, for Guffman. It's all those guys, right? It's those improvisers,
group.
They led the way for all that stuff.
Jane Lynch, she was in that. Yes. That was the first time I think I saw Jane Lynch in anything. And then like a year later, she came to my play, A Clockwork Orange, and I found out she lives in my neighborhood. I keep running into Jane Lynch in my life and it's one of these weird things. And I introduce myself and then she's like, oh, Seamus. Yeah. It's very funny. She's into dogs too and everything. So we work with some of the same dog charities.
Okay. Nice. Oh, listen, if we get onto dogs,
we
are done for.
Okay, good.
Hours and hours of this podcast in the bin.
It's a detour down the road.
All right, fine. Let's plow on through now. We're in 2005, Seamus. You're in Hollywood. You still any big TV breaks by this stage? Still in theater?
2005, I had been doing guest stars here and there. I think at that point I had been doing things like Without a Trace. I did a really good episode of the show Cold Case. Basically, all the Jerry Bruckheimer shows, I've done them. So I think I was on already maybe CSI, Original Flavor, by that time, I think. It was right prior to getting married. My wife and I got married in 2006.
So if I'm
putting the timeline of my life correct, yeah. So some breaks there, nothing huge yet.
Right. And those CSI shows, I mean, to act in those things, because they are not... Formulaic is an unpleasant word to use. That sounds derogatory. But, you know...
That's true, though.
It's formulaic, right?
There's a format.
Thank you. Yes. Format is a nicer word. But
formatic. Yeah.
When you're doing that and you know you're slotting in, you're a cog slotting into a larger plot.
Right.
You still got to make it interesting and exciting, and you still got to make yourself, and you managed to do this because, of course, the success that then came in Castle. You still got to make yourself stand out so you pop on screen, so you don't slip into the background.
Well,
tricks, please.
You know, the thing is, with all this sort of idea, you have to take this dialogue that's very expositional.
That's what I mean. Yes, exactly.
And you have to find a way to give it some perspective. Because a lot of times it's not written anything other than, we call it laying pipe. Which it sounds sexual, it's not. So laying the pipe of the show, right, or the story, and you have to find a perspective. How do I feel about this information that this person I'm talking about? It's very easy to just get away with, I'm going to come in here, and they call it park and bark. I'm just going to stand here and talk. I'm giving you all these Hollywood phrases.
Park and bark, guys, are you writing these down? These are amazing.
You stand there and talk, and it's very easy to get away with just being neutral and just saying the lines as fast as you can, getting them out and everything. I think we should run down these phones and financials and find a way. This guy's not telling us the truth. Yeah, I think there's something, and everyone sounds like the same.
Yeah.
So how do I feel about this? How do I feel about this information? And, you know, it's a little exhausting making decisions about feeling certain ways about things that you are not part of.
Right.
This is not lyrical drama. This is something that's like you're an exterior person telling a story.
Yeah.
But finding some personality to contribute that. I'm very good at that. And I got very good at that. I'm very good at exposition. That's not a compliment. that just means you're always going to get that exposition because you do it well. For instance, are you familiar with the show Criminal Minds?
Of course, yeah.
So they have a rule.
I used to do continuity before Criminal Minds on
the
station here.
Did you?
Up next on Virgin One, Criminal Minds.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
That show, those characters are so interchangeable. And I have lots of friends on that show, by the way. So,
I mean, it's coming back or something. The caveat, I've got lots of friends who are on that show. Strapping guys.
And that's why I can tell you this. If you are late to rehearsal on that, they call rehearsal and you're like five and everyone's waiting on you and you're in your trailer, like not coming out for whatever it is.
Sure.
Those big scenes where they're putting everything together where there's seven people, they will cut you and give and disperse your lines to someone else.
Hi.
And when I hear that, that leads me to believe that those lines can be said by anyone in the room. If they are that interchangeable, if you are like, you're like Henry Ford's assembly line, you're just interchangeable parts of these things, that means that that can be said by anyone.
Oh,
so you're kind of like, all right, that being said, you have to put personality on top. And they were very good about that.
Mm.
You know, but that's what sort of it is this pipe that's being laid. Your little section, plunk, there it is, screw it in. Get your spanners.
But take ownership.
Do you like how I made
love
it
that
British
pipe.
Like that? Bring your spanners.
That's very nice.
Bring your spanners to set. That's what I'm saying, Tom. When life gives you pipe, you bring spanners.
Oh my God, I love it so much.
A lot of spanner talk.
I hope actors listening to this are learning, because I am.
I don't know.
Take your pipe to set. It's like, you know, it's your bit of pipe and love your bit of pipe. Sign the corner of your bit of pipe. That's what you've got
to do,
guys.
For the generations to come.
Yeah, if you're laying pipe today, make sure you sign it. Not a great analogy, because we use a phrase in this country called laying cable, which means going for a shit. So don't get those confused. Okay, thanks.
Find us on Twitter and Instagram. Toasterpot is the name we're trying to jam. It's simple like a sarnie filled with cheese and ham. At Toasterpot, I swear it's not a scam, I think.
So, here we go. Look, 2005, Seamus, we have got a 4-ounce... A three-pack of feeding bottles, 4-ounce feeding bottles.
Feeding bottles. What were we doing now? What year is this?
2005.
2005.
This could either be used for feeding a child or for feeding a tiny animal.
It might be a tiny animal that wasn't eating at the time, perhaps. Oh. It might have been one of our dogs, one of our first dogs.
That's, go on.
Maybe. Well, we have dogs that have since passed away. This is how old I am, that dogs keep coming in and out of my life, cycling and breaking my heart every time, and yeah, this was probably one of those circumstances. We adopted, our first dog was like a 10-year-old rescue senior dog, and so we had him for, I think, maybe 3 years. Oh. So this might have been for George, sweet old George. So
I feel like I should play a song. This one's for George. I'm going to show you my phone, Seamus.
Please do. We're going down to the dog detour,
Ignore the humans. Look at that.
Oh, my gosh, look at that beard.
So she, again, what you said, to take it in a sad direction, she passed away 2 months ago.
Oh, my God.
And it is horrendous.
Yeah, because they're part of your family, you know, and you... And they look at you, and they want nothing but to be close to you and be part of you.
Which is the opposite of my actual family, right?
they want to push you the hell away.
My kids are like, please, dogs. Unless you're a screen, get away from me. Whereas my dog was always like, I love how bad you smell. So this is amazing. Tell us about the dog rescue stuff. I love this.
There's a bunch of different charities that we used to work with more actively than we do now. But Stray Rescue of St. Louis, this wonderful group founded by this guy named Randy Green. Rim, and they became the first city in the United States that was kill-free. And that's a big goal of a lot of different rescue organizations.
Stop putting them down.
Yeah, not euthanizing for capacity. That's the whole thing. Is like when the shelters are overbooked, they start euthanizing dogs and ones that are unadoptable. So going to a model like Best Friends, which is another organization out in Utah and then Los Angeles, they had an initiative called No Kill LA. Okay. And sort of showing these shelters how to operate like a business. For instance, someone shows up to your front door, someone should greet you friendly. It should not feel like you're going to a dog prison. You know,
right.
It should feel like you're going to a place to adopt. So there should be rooms. It should be comfortable.
Yes.
You should be able to see the cats, play with them, and pet the dogs and spend some time with your family and see how they interact with your kids.
Yeah.
And you know, most of these city shelters run by municipal services, they don't do that.
Of course. This is a very American, using the power of business to try and do good. But why not?
Make it feel friendly. Make it feel a place that you don't dread going to, because it's going to be full of sadness.
Yeah.
You know, and so that, like, a lot of these initiatives have done that. Stray Rescue of St. Louis, as I said, and Best Friends Animal Society, and a couple other ones like Farm Sanctuary. We work with them. They rescue farm animals as well.
Yeah,
Animal charities. There's a ton of them.
I know.
I wish I had more time.
Of course. And you know, it's one of those things that... You just, as soon as you find yourself in any kind of position of profile, it's like, I really want to help the dogs. What have I got to do? Do you have dogs growing up?
Yeah. My parents were always bringing dogs in. They were like the first person, a dog would run by and without a collar, and they'd grab it and bring it in. And
that was amazing.
Kind of just sort of the ethos I grew up with. It's like, if there's a stray dog, bring them in, take care of them, give them food, and then see if you can find the owner. And then if you can't, find an owner and adopt them out. They did it with so many cats and dogs coming through our house.
And if it's a really nice dog, don't try too hard to find the owner.
Well, that's
anyone?
Sometimes they would stick around for a long time, and that would be just, they'd be part of the family at
that's
that.
Amazing.
Over and over, that story.
God, your life is steeped in dogs. This is brilliant.
Dogs.
It's the most important thing in the world. All right, look, we're moving through to 2006 now. Oh, here we go. You've got a British export here, December the 13th. You've bought Knowing Me, Knowing You with Alan Partridge.
Oh, yes.
So, absolutely, in like the most vital bit of British comedy in the last 20 years.
I've had lots of Alan Partridge conversations. A friend of mine named Giles, I just did a movie with him. Giles Matthews, if you're out there, dial in. No, he, yeah, and just so many, like, he kind of my experience was up to a certain point with Alan Partridge. And then beyond that, he was like, oh, this is all the other stuff he's been doing. I was like, oh, I had no idea that this thing's been going further. So yeah, just hilarious stuff. And back in the day, that's the only way to get these things in America.
Of course.
You have to send away from them on a DVD, and then you watch it 1,000 times and lend it out, and it gets lost.
But yeah, yeah, and we're very happy to send it to you as well. It's what we, you know, it's our arguably our best cultural export.
Please take exactly. All of our entertainment.
Have it. Okay, good. Elsewhere in 2006, we've got some travel stuff going on here. We've got a Greek phrasebook and a Turkish phrasebook.
This is honeymoon time. This is honeymoon preparation. This is going to Santorini, Athens, where else? Obviously Istanbul, but I had done a play that was about the hotel called the Parapalas in Istanbul, and so I forced my wife to stay at the Parapalas
as research
in Istanbul. They built the hotel for the Orient Express, and Agatha Christie wrote Murder on the Orient Express in the hotel.
Wow.
And Ataturk had a suite there, and Greta Garbo was, you know, stayed a long period of time there, and all these famous people had come through this hotel. The hotel's a little bit, as you might imagine, a little bit threadbare in places.
Shabby chic.
Mm-hmm. and needed an infusion of cash. And so
did you discover this when you arrived on your honeymoon?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Right.
The beds were a bit old, maybe a couple decades old, and very hard, not very comfortable. But you know, great views and a wonderful breakfast.
Yeah.
And a great location. That's the part.
That's what you're really after.
Yeah.
So that's quite an adventurous holiday to go on then, over to Turkey and Greece and all those.
Yeah. I mean, Santorini was probably the best part, the highlight of anything. I mean, obviously, a lot of people go there for their honeymoon, but it is one of the most beautiful places on earth, and I can give you good recommendations about where to stay.
Okay,
in like Ia and places like that, in the northern tip of the island.
Oh, really?
Yeah, stay out of Fira or Fira Stefania.
So you're quite travel-y then. You like your travel?
We like to travel. My wife and I. We have for a long time, and now we spend a lot of time in Europe. We bought a house in Portugal.
Right.
And so we're kind of fixing that up, maybe doing some short-term rental. We bought in the little town of Sintra, which is about a half an hour outside of Lisbon.
Why Portugal?
They have a golden visa program that you invest in their country buying property at a certain level, and they will give you a visa, and after 5 years, you can have your passport.
Oh, a nice EU passport.
Yes.
I can get back in the fast lane at passport control.
You might want to look into this program.
It's fun. I've got an Irish grandfather.
Oh, so you see, that's the loophole.
All of a sudden, all my family are like, we're so Irish. Never been. Oh, my. You know, it's crazy.
What's the purchase history of this jokester? Stay tuned for my mate, but a toaster.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
All right, good. Look, 2011, National Geographic Kids Ultimate, what is it, dinosaur book.
Oh, nephews. Yeah, now we're talking about nephew gifts and trying to introduce paleontology into their lives.
Yes.
And all they want to do is collect sneakers. So that was a success.
The power of the dinosaur to bewilder and terrify and blow the mind of a child.
I think we had just seen those Jurassic Park movies, and I'm, anyway, I'm Not a fan. They're meant for families.
That's how I went
children.
Quiet then, guys. I'm just trying to let him dig
Jurassic
his own.
Jurassic Park. Yeah,
the new one is an absolute dog. Jeff Goldblum was literally sat in this chair.
Has
like
he?
2 weeks ago. He came in to talk on the show. And we...
I bet he's fun in it, though.
Oh, okay. He's gorgeous. Yeah, he's glorious. So. But he did the interview, and my co-presenter, as soon as the interview had finished playing out on air, she just went, the film's crap. That was off air, guys.
And I bet it'll make a ton of money and a lot of smiles across the faces of the children of the world, Tom. And in the end, isn't that what entertainment's about?
Wait, that's why we're doing the podcast.
And children smiling.
All I want is a kid's smile. I don't care if it's wind. I'll still take it.
I just wanted to see their beautiful teeth.
Hey, talking of beautiful teeth.
Yeah.
This sort of links in.
Nice
really.
Segue, Tom. Yeah, wow. Segue.
Well, you say it's a nice segue.
Sometimes.
I've started it, but I don't think it finishes. premium rapid kitchen onion goggles. I was sort of imagining the grimace of onions and their teeth are there. Anyway, I'm
no,
going to
we
it.
Can ask me about it. This was it. Okay, so they used these on the show Castle. And there were onion goggles, and there would be kind of fun things like that. Castle gets a pair of onion goggles, and people are going, "What is this onion goggle thing?" And then I'm like, you know what? My wife cries a lot when I talk to her in the kitchen, and she also happens to be chopping onions. And so, like, why don't I get her some onion goggles as a surprise? So I think it was a Christmas gift, perhaps, or something around, maybe a birthday.
Tell us a bit. We've got a bit of Castle business there. Tell us a bit about the show Castle. Massive show.
Yeah. We ran 8 seasons, 173 episodes.
You must be so rich. just to say, in the UK, if you did that, you'd earn about $8,000. So congratulations.
And it's a buyout, yeah. It's the longest I've ever had any job in my life. I was on that show longer than I was in high school, college, and graduate school combined.
Yeah.
And you kind of, you know, I spent the majority of my 30s on that show. So, you know, the time in between there, my God. But yeah, you know, it started out as a very small show in America. It was a procedural show. The network that I was on, ABC, they didn't really have very many procedurals. That was sort of the milieu of... CBS.
I see. Okay.
Like the Criminal Minds, I mentioned CSI, all those ones.
So that's all CBS.
They were on a different network. So we were on the network that was a little bit more of a soap opera network, the Desperate Housewives network.
Okay.
Right? So
I see.
So for them, growing a procedural was important. They didn't have really much like that. Mm. And so we did it in our own way. A lot of procedurals take themselves very seriously. Mm. We were allowed to have a little bit of fun and really took the cue, I think, from Nathan Fillion, who was our lead, played Castle.
Yeah.
We took the lead that they allowed him to be funny because he's naturally just a very funny human being.
Right.
And they allowed him to be funny in what he did. And so we kind of followed suit and allowed it. We were, and I found myself on a 1 hour drama going, okay. So what's funnier? If I say it like this or if I wait and I pause and then I say, I'm like, I can't believe I'm having these conversations. I feel like I'm in high school and I'm trying to like get the essence of comedy and understand a little bit more because that's what we're doing.
Right.
Like all day long on Castle, you know, that was the best part of it.
Look how well that's worked for the Marvel universe.
Yes,
injected humor and personality everywhere, and it's been this rapid discovery. And if you watch any film or TV show before that thing happened, they're crap. Like I was watching early X-Men movies, just going, "Oh my god, they take themselves
so seriously."
Couldn't work out what it was I didn't like about it.
I mean, and you know, I went to a lot of police conventions and police awards shows, and every cop that I talked to, a lot of them they were into our show. Because they said that this is like how we talk to each other at work.
Right.
You know, we don't take ourselves so seriously. Like, it's not all like, we got to get this guy, Tom. Tom, give me the truth, Tom. We got to get this guy. He's out on the streets. He'll murder again. You know, it's sort of
we're joking about lunch.
We're joking about, you know, losing weight. We're joking about all these things. And so we were allowed to do that. We were given the free rein to do that kind of thing, to like find our way into the humor of these situations and still solve the murder and the mystery and all that.
So, and still do all the Jeopardy and all the stuff and all the tension, but a little bit of humor.
But some humor. It goes, and sometimes it's just a quick throwaway quip.
And also, it makes people like your show. It makes it upgrade from a like to a proper.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Because they feel like my people. All right, good. Look, we're still in 2015, Seamus.
Okay.
We've gone for a Nest carbon monoxide alarm there. A smoke alarm. Lovely.
Yes, the original ones only lasted for 7 years, and I have 10 of them. And so I recently had to replace them. They don't say they last only 10 years because there's radioactive elements.
It's a radioactive thing!
And they decay in your house. So you have radioactive things in your house, and you don't know that. And And they're like, yeah, after a certain while, those you got to get rid of them. And the reason I got the Nest was because that they didn't do the beeping thing.
Oh, like, when the batteries run out.
When your battery runs out, it just sort of sends you a notification on your phone that, oh, I got to do something about that and have to replace the battery. And then when it started to decay and said I need to replace it, the chirp happened. The chirp.
You must be like,
over and
what?
Over. The chirp.
It's
just
that.
And then the smoke detector would go off in the middle of the night. And always like 2 a.m.
Was that its way of saying I'm dying?
Yes, I'm dying. and I need you to pay attention to me. And this is the worst time for me to do this, but I'm going to do it now.
It's so annoying that all these devices now have different ways of getting in touch with us. So frequently, Seamus, I will get an email from my front doorbell.
Yeah.
Saying I'm running out of batteries.
My watch emails me. My smartwatch, my little Fitbit here, sent me an email this morning saying, my battery's pretty low, man. You should put me in. I'm like
That's
at 18%. I can't go on much longer like this, man.
I quite like it, though. I think, but not for devices, for things in my life. Like if I could get an email from my marriage department saying, listen, man, you've got to recharge that stuff. It's at 15%. You know, the time your kids have spent with you, that's in the low 20s. It would be useful, but not so much with bloody front doorbells. That's hilarious, though, because we got a house done up in 2017 and we got new fire alarms everywhere. And I remember seeing the sticker, November 2023.
Yeah.
I can still remember that because I was like, that is a million years away.
I was like, I should have these the rest of my life. I should be able to give these to my children. Why?
Right.
What do you mean you expire?
Also, the idea that we are all with smoke alarms, this is a very little known thing. We're all sitting there. With radioactive decay.
Yeah, happening. Somewhere attached to our wall.
Probably watching the Chernobyl box set going, well, that's awful.
Like,
that hasn't happened yet.
Well, in 50 years, they go, God, those poor bastards, didn't they know any better?
All right, look, what have we got here? There's still lots of DIY stuff going on. We have got, oh, look, here's something I'm about to get into. Right? Oh, my God, you've got the two things I'm about to buy. Brilliant.
Okay.
Brilliant.
Ask me.
You've gone for a £25 kettlebell and some dumbbells as well.
Yes, we work out at home, my wife and I.
So I'm about to start doing this.
I wake up very early. You wake up very early for your show. I have an obsession with working out before I get to work because it's not going to happen afterwards.
Right.
So like a Monday morning, I may,
on
a typical show, I don't know, I'll get up at 3:30, 4 o'clock and put in an hour and a half.
I'm going to be sick.
In my gym. So you can't even go to the gym. They're not even open at 4 a.m, but you can in your house.
Unless you're an absolute lunatic.
Well, you get...
Don't you wake all the dogs up? Aren't they like,
no,
hey, what are we doing?
They get used to it. They get used to it after a while. But yeah, it's ungodly early. And, you know, the at least with television, the offsets that happen where you're waking up Monday morning at 4 o'clock, you know, and then you're working until 8 and all the union rules that we have. So but you're going to work at Friday at like 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And then working to 3 or 4 in the morning.
To leave the gaps in between. I filmed a TV show years ago in LA called Torchwood in 2008 or 2009 or whatever.
Oh, yeah, and Torchwood. That's right. We did that there. Yeah.
Right, yeah.
That's
and
right.
It was an amazing highlight of my career. Hopefully there'll be others. And I was flabbergasted at the hours. I thought America is going to be so heavily unionized. There'll be 10-hour day tops.
Yeah. 14 hours.
Oh, my God.
14. They probably top out at 14. It gets the only reason they don't go beyond 14 is because it gets really economically punitive.
Yes. Yes.
But they'll go past 12. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And you go to 14.
All the time.
You're like, oh my God.
And
yeah.
You're losing your
mind.
Something like Castle, where you're doing that year after year after year.
It's a slog. It's a slog. Because we put in 14-hour days. That was our average. A lot of shows are kind of, they're trying to do an initiative where they stick it to 12. But I mean, really, honestly, there's so much to cover. You get really ambitious. You're filming a 1-hour movie in 8 days.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it is. And so
because the quality of these hour-long shows has just gone through the roof.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
Like you have to. It's like you have to up your game. And sure, we could go back to what we did in the 70s and 80s and they put in 8-hour days. Go watch some of that television. And it's rather unsophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
They'll stay in a master shot for the entire scene and then cut into like 2 overs and never flip into reverse ever.
Yes.
And you're like, you got away with this?
Yeah.
What was your day like here?
I think it should be one take. Yeah, I think so. The whole episode.
Yeah,
sure.
It's like, let's see. 6 o'clock. Is it cocktail time? All right,
I mean,
bring them out.
It's basically a filmed play, isn't it, when they do that?
Yeah.
So this is the detail of lots of coverage means you're doing lots and lots of shots. So you're running a scene like 10, 15 times.
We're getting into the weeds here with the,
two or three.
With the industry talk. We'll stay in the weeds. Maybe we got some actors out there. Hit us up. Call number
weeds.
2.
I just can't get any roles.
But, you know, as a result of that, you have to have a tremendous amount of patience. And, you know, I didn't get to see my wife very much. I get to see my partner on the show, John Huertas, more than I saw my wife.
But your wife was on the show.
Yeah, she'd come on a couple episodes every season. She played my wife on the show. So,
yeah.
So she would do that, and it was lovely we could do that. And that was nice because I could see her.
Yeah.
Because
that must have been good for chemistry and improv and fun. Or
I think so, yeah. Sometimes she was sort of like coming in there, I'm like, just relax, you know all these people, and let's just have some fun, and then it would make it so much easier. You know, because when you are a guest star on another show, there's a little bit of like, oh my God, well, I don't want to say the wrong thing, and I don't want to... I'm a lot better about that now. Like, I come on there, it's like I act like I just work there all the time.
Totally.
I'm not really scared anymore. But back in the day, I was.
I've done a lot of day player. And then you turn up and it's like there's a whole...
You don't know if the lead is going to introduce themselves to you.
It's like this. Like, they're like... They're
it's
an,
cold.
They're an orchestra and you've rocked up with the wrong instrument. You know, feel like...
It's a moving train and you just hopped on.
Yeah.
And then you kind of go, this is the way they do it. Wow, everyone has all the answers. Oh, that's it? We're turning around now? Oh,
right.
I didn't know. Yeah.
It's so hard. Listen, come back to the kettlebell. And dumbbell. Come on, this is how this started.
All right, so you need to give yourself a good workout program.
My friend's a PT and I'm onto that, so
good. Okay, good. Because you don't want to get injured. That's the worst thing to do is to start working out because then you can't do anything at all. So,
So
finding something that has a good mix of things with some weights and maybe some cardio, some body weight stuff, I highly recommend.
So I've done cardio for years and years and years. I've run all the time. My knees are starting to go a bit. And also, my knees are like, bye-bye. But I love running, love running. So do you go out in the back garden? How long do you do? 20 minutes, half an hour?
I used to be like stupid ridiculous and do like an hour to hour and a half.
Are you tired for the rest of the day when you've done that?
No, it's just a good... Some days I don't have very much to do, so it doesn't matter. but I might have to trim the hedge or something. But no, I try to keep it less than 45 minutes. I try to.
Okay.
Sometimes it's hard to fit everything in. And sometimes I'll like, well, let's do another 20 minutes of yoga on top of that just to increase flexibility. Mm-hmm. And yes, flexibility. Make sure to find there's a little flexibility component in whatever workout you're doing because you're getting older. So am I.
Yeah.
And flexibility gets more important as you get older than strength.
So, yeah.
Than building muscle.
I got out of my car this morning. And it was a BMW. It was a really low car.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
It's... an issue, and I need to jump on the yoga. I need to do all the things that up until now I've been either too lazy, too scared, or too embarrassed to do. Right?
It's never too late.
Never too late, man. 2016. I don't know what's going on here. You're sort of coming across as a spy on your Amazon purchase history now, Seamus Dever. We've got the Seagate backup, 2 terabyte portable hard drive. There's a lot of multi terabytes, a 3 terabyte. I mean, we're nearly at 10 terabytes bought in a month.
That's a lot of terabytes. What on earth are you doing with so many terabytes, Seamus?
What's going on?
I think our computers crashed and we like lost everything. That kept happening. I'm like, okay, right, let's do a backup, and then let's do a backup of the backup.
Right, okay, fine.
So now we're a little backup crazy, yeah.
Did you just Seamus? Are you Seamus or Seamus? Am I calling
I'm
you?
I'm Seamus.
Oh, fine, okay.
You did it right.
I thought my name was Seamus? No, I thought I just heard you refer to yourself as Seamus, and I was like,
I might have
shit.
Said seamless. Did I say that?
You said seamless. Okay, fine.
Maybe I said seamless. God. Let's do a... Did I say that? I was like, oh my God,
seamless
this entire
is fine,
time.
But I just thought, holy shit, have I been Seamusing a Seamus?
No, you've been right. A lot of times I'll get the Seamus for a long time, and I'll go, all right, let's just stop. Let me correct you. This is gone
two,
way too
2-3 years in.
Yeah.
Like, hey, you've got something which we've just bought. I'm interested to know if it's worked for you. You've bought the air purifier.
Oh, yes.
Any good?
It's good. Yeah, that one, it's good. You have to replace the filter every once in a while. And that's not bad. But they're all like proprietary filters. So I feel like you're going to have to get the same one from Amazon for like every 6 months for... its lifetime. And
I think those filters might have a bit of a markup on them. I think there's a profit margin there when it's 25 quid.
I'm feeling that. Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
Bit of plastic and a bit of sort of cardboard in the middle of it. And
it is what it is.
What are we filtering here?
So we've got it for my eldest because he's got terrible, terrible, bless him, hay fever. And it's peak hay fever time at the moment.
It is, right?
It's
I was
really
sneezing
bad.
Yesterday and I was just like, oh my God, everyone thinks I have COVID, I swear.
Do you know why it's so bad here?
Why?
Because all the trees are male.
Oh.
The patriarchy is making you sneeze. Councils bought, back in the 70s, loads and loads of male trees. You can have male or female trees. And so all the trees are trying to mate.
Because they produce more flowers?
There you go.
Is that what it is?
Well,
more pollen.
Is the... So it's the stuff.
Yeah.
So not to put too fine a pun on it, the hay fever
That's pretty sad. They're just stifled the entire thing. Because where are the female trees?
Female
this
trees.
Happened in China, too. The same thing.
There you go. You see?
They'll never learn.
And air quality in LA, that's an issue, right? That's bad.
Yeah, it's better than it used to be, but yeah, some days we have some really smoggy days, and without any rain to clear everything out, smog just like hovers in the air, and you're like, oh God, it's really bad. Like you can't even see the mountain that's maybe a couple miles away. It's so hazy. Yeah,
wow.
It gets bad there. So,
but it is getting better. I'm always trying to be positive because there's more electric cars, I guess, right?
And some congestion, but a lot of the electric initiative, yeah, is helping those things as well. But
no one uses public transport in LA. It's insane. Or has it got better?
It's getting better. The subway is going a lot more places. They opened the Expo line that takes you from downtown to Santa Monica. It still doesn't go through my neighborhood in West Hollywood, but that's all starting to change because we're getting the Olympics in 2028.
Okay.
So they're actually building a subway through Beverly Hills, which I didn't think would ever happen.
Wow.
But they're
digging. I mean, it's fun. Beverly Hills. I can't imagine there's anyone who's a bit sort of, that's my landy in Beverly Hills. I imagine everyone's very chilled about you drilling through your basement.
How dare you drill underneath our pristine, whatever they are.
My seven pools. What will I mean, how on earth do you even begin to do that? Drill through Beverly Hills.
Well, they have the big tunnel machines, the big boring machines to go through. And they have two of them. They have names. They've given names to them.
That's adorable.
And you can follow where they're going.
Oh, that's adorable.
It's very smart of MTA to do that.
It's clever because even if I'm a landowner, now I'm like, ooh, here comes Susie the drill.
Coming underneath. Yeah. Nearly a block away now.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
That's very clever.
So they're doing that. And it's a long time coming. It's so stupid that they haven't done it a long time ago. And just, I mean, because I would use mass transportation all the time. I do here when I'm in London and when I'm in New York, the same thing. And I'm like, oh my God, I have to get in my car for everything. And it's just, it's a mistake.
It is. Well, let's hope they can fix it.
They did a play with David Hare at the Bridge. That was kind of the subject matter about being obsessed with the car.
Yes.
Ralph Fiennes. I watched it the other night.
Oh, really?
Over there at the Bridge Theater.
Bridge Theater.
And it was about kind of the infrastructure they built into New York and like you dependent on the car to go out to like Long Island and sort of saying like, hey, let's be so dependent on the car. And there's a bit of a racist element to it as well because you had to be, you know, sort of a certain income level to afford a car.
Mm.
And that excluded some people from the experience, you know.
Yeah, the car is forever tied in with, in this country, certainly class and race and all those things, that little safety bubble.
Yep. Yep.
Keep you away from other people. You know, I still remember now driving into certain areas when I was a kid with my dad who lived in London. And he'd put the central locking on. So you wouldn't sit there and pop that on. You'd hear the doors go down. Why are we doing that, Daddy?
Just keeping honest people honest.
Well, that's it. Exactly.
That's what we're doing.
Oh, my God. Daddy, is that you?
Father? Father, are you here?
Here's an interesting one, Seamus.
Yes.
I don't know how to feel about this. January the 22nd, 2020. So this is actually pre-lockdown.
Oh, pre-lockdown.
You bought yourself a vertical gun hanger and rifle storage. Uh-oh.
Now you've found my American secrets in there.
Here we go.
I have a 12-gauge shotgun in my house for protection purposes. I did not purchase it myself. It was purchased by one of my good friends who played my partner on the show Castle, John Huertas, for Christmas. He wanted me to have a gun to protect my new home. I think this was 2011 or something like
that.
Right. So he bought me a 12-gauge.
Happy
it's got
Christmas.
A collapsible stock.
Okay.
I'm quite comfortable with guns. I grew up around guns, and I have shot it at the firing range just because I needed to know how it operated. But I wanted a quick way to grab it if someone broke in the middle of the night. And so I have a flashlight on the end of the tube. And barrel, as we call it in the gun business. And I needed a quick rack for it. So I needed somewhere to grab it off of it. We don't have children or anything, so I don't have to put it in a gun safe.
Unless you've got a dog with opposable thumbs, that would be a nightmare.
Or
one of the dogs steps up.
If that happens, I think we're all doomed at that point.
I'd be quite
proud.
Drive
their own cars. Like, you did it. You opened the door yourself. And so I needed a way to grab it off there. And I have several steps. The safety is on. It's not even racked in the chamber. So I have it ready to go. And frankly, what I'm hoping for is if there's ever a problem, I need that thing
noise
to scare the hell out of somebody.
You see, is it not
That's
worth
it.
Just buying an app on your phone that makes the But presumably, as a good West Coast American, you're all for all the gun control stuff, right? That's gotta,
absolutely. No, it's ridiculous. No one should own these guns. It's not in the Constitution. I'm sorry. You can say that all you want. It's not in our Constitution. This is well-regulated militia. And I guarantee our founding fathers didn't anticipate a gun that can fire 100 rounds in a minute. They were talking about muskets, and they were talking about the need to have guns in your home in case the British came back. Sorry, no offense. Came back into your home. Or if something happened in your government and you needed to take over that government, if tyranny came back.
Yeah.
And the funny part about that is, so tyranny comes back to our government. Go ahead, try to take over the government. See how well that goes. Go ahead. There's your Second Amendment. No, what are you doing? January 6th, that was people exercising their Second Amendment, Tom. How well did that go? You know what I mean? So it's ridiculous. So what are we tied to this stupid thing, like getting into the minds of the people from 200 years ago?
It's crazy.
It's
crazy.
Madness.
Yeah. So I don't think there's anyone listening to this who's going to disagree with you, to be honest. But it's always nice to preach to the choir.
No, I'm all for gun control. Here's the thing. It should be regulated by a state organization. That way the government makes money off of it. It should be taxed. Yeah. You should have a safety course for it.
You can't just walk into a shop and buy one. I mean, it's insane.
It's dumb. You can't do that with a car.
Right, it's a car. The car comparison is completely legit.
Regulate like a car and regulate in a way that, like, well, if you've spent some time in a hospital or if you've had domestic abuse or if there are reports against you, you have restraining orders against you, you should not be able to buy a gun. I mean, God, that just makes common sense.
All right, okay, fine. Let's move on.
We've covered some really important ground today, Tom.
We have been all over the place, haven't we? I've really enjoyed this.
This has been
so interesting.
It was good.
Seamus, look, we're getting towards the end of this episode of My Mate Bought a Toaster. I believe you might be my first... You're my first American.
Am I your first American? I popped your American cherry.
Mate, 115 episodes in. Some cherries have been popped.
This long to get an American.
And there's loads of them. There's loads
of
them.
Pandemic, you know? Pandemic.
Look, I was about to try and go and find the most sort of recent thing that you've bought. Again, you've bought some storage, 64 gigabytes of storage. You bought a gimbal. Yeah. And then we've got the Casa Outdoor Smart Plug. It's a plug for outside, and it's smart. How can we use that as symbolic for the end of this episode? My Mate Bought a Toaster. You know, you've got some nice gadgetry there. You've got maybe it's to plug in your outdoor gym.
It's to plug in some outdoor lights, and I thought I would have it on a timer because they're programmable.
Yes.
And I think it failed because my friends, our friends who are watching the house were like, the fountain's not coming on anymore. I was like, oh, crap. I just replaced that thing to make your life easier, and now it's failed.
But you're going to get an email. So if you're not getting an email from the actual smart thing, you're getting an email from the people who can't use the smart. Either way, you're going to get emailed for this.
Either way, you're going to get emails about it.
I do love all the smart sort of stuff, and you love a gadget and all sorts of stuff in here, Seamus. This has been such an interesting walk through the last 20 years. 2002, there we go. 2002 to 2022.
My God, 20 years.
Seamus Deva, not Seamus Diva. What a pleasure to meet you. And you're over in the UK. How long are you over here for?
Just a few more days, heading over to Ireland in a couple days and investigate some things.
Are you Irish?
I am Irish.
Okay.
I'm Northern Irish, yes.
Okay.
We're from the north, from Donegal. And so I have lots of family in near Belfast and in Omagh. I'm very English, by the way, too. This is not covered, but and not many people know this, but I'm actually descended from the kings of England.
What?
Yeah.
Why have you said that as we get towards minutes from the end of this podcast? Go now. Tell me now. What?
Edward I is my 26th great-grandfather. So
he oppressed my people. He oppressed the Welsh.
I know. There's a lot of conflict because he oppressed a lot of my people too. Yeah. So it's like, wait a minute. So both ways, your families.
But how appropriate that you're related to Edward I. And then he worked on a show called Castle. He would be so proud because he built so many to oppress my people. This is amazing.
Sorry about that, yeah.
Finally, an apology.
I'm so sorry on behalf of the entire Plantagenet family. I apologize,
amazing.
Tom.
That's amazing. And I'm fascinated by the idea of finding family traits and going, oh my God, you do that too? Do they look the same?
If we have time, show me the. I'll show you.
It's your phone again,
I'll show you the family tree. It gets interesting, and we'll just riff for a second while I look all this stuff up.
So finally, the phone is back in Seamus's hands now. I've had his phone
back in my hands. God, it's warm.
It's my hot hands.
Why is it so sticky?
It's because there's been loads of notifications from your smart plugs,
like telling me that someone is in your living room.
It says something about a massive fire, but I'm sure that's fine.
No, that's probably fine. That happens nearly all the time. So look up this document. Go to the beginning of the document and it's interesting.
So
this is my mother's into genealogy.
The Harris family tree.
Harris.
Garnered from familyhistoryancestry.com. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's going back to...
You can skim for the first couple of pages. Skim.
Yeah.
Harris.
Oh my Lord, 1246.
Yeah. Goes back pretty far.
Goes
back to Charlemagne.
Yeah.
I guess
here the family line. This is back in 866. 866.
You can do that with royalty. They took records where no one else did. It's crazy.
And on the last page, it just says Adam married Eve. Wow, that's amazing.
What a tree.
How have you done that? You must be really proud of this. This is awesome.
Yeah.
Well, listen, what started off as an interview with a random American actor has ended up with a royalty revelation.
Yeah.
Seamus, you're a superstar. So nice to meet you. Thank you for coming on My Mate Bought a Toaster.
Pleasure to meet you, Tom. Thank you so much.
It's My Mate Bought a Toaster.
that's it from My Mate Bought a Toaster for this week. Thank you very much indeed for listening. Don't we love Seamus Deaver? Seamus Deaver, Tom, just go again. What a lovely man. I really enjoyed being in his company for pretty much that entire thing. I haven't edited hardly any of that out, apart from when we said a lot. And there's already still a lot of ums left in there. So anyway, that's today's episode. If you would like to support the podcast and listen to episodes without adverts and exclusively early, give us a nudge at patreon.com/toasterpod. And that's it, really. We will see you next week when my guest will be... I don't know. I haven't decided yet. I think I'm going to put the Josh Pugh episode out. He's a fantastic comic who's just had an amazing Edinburgh. So Josh Pugh, there we are, I've decided as I speak. Josh Pugh will be next week's episode, and it will be up on Patreon very soon. Indeed, all the best, kind regards. Thanks for coming.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.